We're going to resume this morning the series I started several weeks or a couple months ago on worldliness. There's some sins. All sin is sin. Don't get me wrong. Sin is sin. Sin is a violation of God's will. It can be an affirmative or a positive action against God's will, or it can be simply a failure to act in accordance with God's will. Sin is transgression of the law. That's an active sin. And then not to do that, which you know is right, is an inactive sin. And so all sin is sin. There are no degrees of sin. Some sins may be more consequential on this life than others, in this life. Such as murder is more consequential than hate, but hate is the basis of murder. And so it's just as wrong to hate as it is to murder, although the person you hate hasn't ceased to live like the person you murdered does. But we want to look this morning particularly at that aspect of worldliness that we call the sins of the tongue. The tongue is impossible to tame, as James says in James chapter 3, "My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths, that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Look also at ships, although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder, wherever the pilot desires. Even so the tongue is a little member, and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles." Now, when he says, if anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, he doesn't mean a sinless man. He's talking about a mature man. The mature man guards his tongue. And by man, we're talking about an individual, not just a male individual. The mature Christian guards his tongue. He keeps a bridle on his tongue because he knows and understands that the tongue cannot be tamed. We cannot just disengage our mind when our tongue is in action. He goes on to say, "And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature. And it is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison." So we've got to keep the bridle on the tongue. No man can tame it, he says. He goes on. James 3 and verse 8 speaks of the tongue as being full of deadly poison. Of course, we know and understand that it's not a literal poison, but a figurative poison, in that it can destroy many things. Nothing can better describe the evil that may be done by the tongue than poison. It poisons relationships, for example. There's no serpent whose bite can do as much harm. There's no poison more deadly to man's body than the tongue is to man's happiness. Let us notice some evils of the tongue. So, we can be happy. God can make us happy, but our tongue can rob us of the happiness that God intends for us, because, again, the tongue can destroy relationships more than anything else that we might think of. First of all, among the sins of the tongue we're going to be talking about this morning is tale-bearing. There are different aspects, and different translations, of course, use different words. But tale-bearing is the word we're going to be looking at now, the sin we're going to be looking at. Tale-bearing is bearing an evil report about another. Sometimes people find out something bad about somebody, they kind of get the goods on them, and they call everybody else up. Say, "Well, did you hear? And hear about so-and-so. And yeah, they got caught up in an affair. They committed adultery." And that's bearing a tale, bearing an evil report about another. It may be true, but it may not be your place to say anything about it. And so we need to keep that in mind. God legislated against tail-bearing in the law of Moses. You shall not go about as a tail-bearer among your people, nor shall you take a stand against the life of your neighbor. I am the Lord. That was forbidden under the law of Moses. The book of Proverbs reveals enough information on the subject that we can know it is still wrong to be a tailbearer. We need to understand about the book of Proverbs. The book of Proverbs is not just law. The book of Proverbs is just that. It is general truths that are not limited by a covenant. Principles that are true, that remain true even today, though the old covenant was long ago done away with. And so here's some principles that we need to understand that continue to be true. A tailbearer reveals secrets, but he who is of a faithful spirit conceals the matter. Everybody probably has at least one person they think they can confide in. The problem is you confide in that one person, well, that person's got just one person they think they can confide in, and that person, so on and so forth, and so before you know it, you've confided in one person, but about a dozen and a half people know it before you get off the phone, maybe, before the sun sets. We need to understand that. But one who is faithful conceals a matter. And that doesn't mean, it's not talking about sweeping something under the rug. It's just talking about how that some things are private. Some things are personal. And now if somebody sins against you, you've got a right to know that. But if somebody does something that doesn't affect you at all, either as an individual or as a member of the congregation, then that really is none of your business. They're not of anybody else's, unless it affects them somehow. And so we need to understand that and not be one who bears an evil report about another. He who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with one who flatters with his lips. If he's flattering you with his lips, it's probably got an ulterior motive just for you to confide in him something that he can turn around and confide in somebody else. There are people who delight in nothing more than to spread evil reports about other people. Also in 26:20, where there is no wood, the fire goes out. Where there is no tailbearer, strife ceases. Tailbearing is fuel for strife. If you want to build a fire, but there's no wood, the fire goes out, or you can't even start one. There's got to be fuel there. Fuel, oxygen, and heat, the three essentials of a fire. But tailbearing is to strive like wood is to a fire. If there's no wood, there's no fire. If there's no tailbearing, there's no strife, generally speaking, although there are certainly other causes of strife. And then there's whispering. This is the evil of detracting from others or exciting suspicion against them by dropping hints or insinuations that they are evil. This is where maybe you might ask them, well, did you hear so-and-so, that's his wife. It may or may not be true, and the person will always say, well, I didn't say he left his wife. I didn't hear it. I should have heard that. But it's planting seeds of doubt about somebody's fidelity to their spouse. Well, that's whispering. Whispering is most often done slyly and in secret. It's only one person, and that person whispers to another person, etc. And so, exciting suspicion against someone else by this whispering. Whisperers are included among those who are worthy of death. In Romans 1:29-32, being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness, they are whisperers. And so, and by the way, Romans chapter 1 here, 29-32, that is a list of God's, or violations of God's moral expectations of man. We can infer from this list, necessarily, here are some things that God expects man to do and not to do. He expects man, for example, to be righteous. Unrighteousness is against God's moral expectations. It was even between the death of Christ, which nailed one law to the cross, and Pentecost, where the next law or covenant was first pronounced. Sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, all these things are antithetical or opposite to God's moral expectations unless they are wrong. And so whispering is one of those things. Also, backbiters, evil-mindedness, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful, who, knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death, not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them. Here are some who were so wicked, so evil, they weren't even ashamed of it. They would defend it. Now, there are people who sin, but then, no, not me. They'll lie about it because they know it's a shameful thing and they don't want to admit to it. But there are other people, they would defend others who do it and don't care if you know that they themselves do it. That's what he's talking about down here. They do the same and approve of those who practice them. They don't care that you know that they do them and that you approve of others who do those things. Whispering can alienate long-time friends. All who hate me whisper together against me. Against me they devise my hurt. That's David at one of the low points in his life. He felt like that was the case, and it may have been a case. It may have been the case with David at that particular time. In Proverbs 16:29, Solomon says, "A violent man entices his neighbor and leads him in a way that is not good." And thus we're warned by Paul in 1 Corinthians 16:33, "Evil companionship corrupt good morals." And this is why. A violent man entices his neighbor and leads him in a way that is not good. We need to make sure that the people we associate with are not such that will lead us in a way that is not good. We don't want to have evil companionships because they will corrupt our good morals. We need to be careful about who we pal around with, etc. One breath of unkindness may start a long train of sad consequences which we have no power to stop. It's kind of like the domino theory. I don't know if you ever played dominoes or played with dominoes, but you line those dominoes up, you stand them up, you know, and you stand them up in a row close enough where if you knock one down, it'll knock the other one down, and people knock them things down, they form a pattern, and it's really something amazing. You can go online and see all kinds of patterns done that. But that's the way whispering is. It starts in motion a series of events that have sad consequences, and you can't stop them once they start. And so we need to make sure we nip it in the bud by not whispering in the first place. And then there's slander. This is a false report uttered with the idea of injuring the reputation of another. We have to be careful what we say. Make sure that we speak the truth, and make sure that it's the truth that needs to be spoken. Sometimes we can speak the truth, but it might not be in our place to speak it. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit. But slander is a false report uttered with the idea of injuring the reputation of another. Slander is both foolish and sinful. In Proverbs 10, verse 18, whoever hides hatred has lying lips. Whoever spreads slander is a fool. Alright, if they hide, they hate, but they hide it. Well, that's just as well as lying about it. And whoever spreads slander is a fool. Why? Well, because of what it can do to the reputation of another. And why not say, "Let us do evil that good may come," as we are slanderously reported, and as some affirm that we say. Their condemnation is just. Here was something that Paul has been accused of by his detractors in Rome. Paul had his detractors everywhere, and he talks about the things that they were saying about him and responds to those things in his letters. So some were saying that Paul said, "Let us do evil that good may come." Paul never said that. The end never justifies the means. Sometimes people will do the cruelest things because they hope to accomplish some good end. No, you can't justify cruelty on the basis of what you intended or hoped would be accomplished. Or slander. Slander is simply wrong. To say that Paul said, "Let us see evil the good may come," was a slanderous report. It says their condemnation is just. That is condemnable. And God will condemn us for that if we do it and never receive forgiveness of it. The Lord will not tolerate slanderers. He says over in Psalm 101 verse 5, "Whoever secretly slanders his neighbor, him I will destroy. The one who has a haughty look and a proud heart, him I will not endure." Now, haughty look is what we usually mean when we describe somebody as looking down their nose at other people. That's a haughty look. Well, you know, I'm better than you. And that's the only way they can make the other person look smaller, you see, by looking down their nose at them. That makes you look tall. You're looking down at them when they're really just as tall as you are, just as big as you are, maybe bigger in some way. Bigger person than you are. Not physically, but in character. And so, whoever secretly slanders his neighbor, him I will destroy. The one who has a haughty look and a proud heart, him I will not endure. That implies to me that one who secretly slanders will usually be characterized by a haughty look and a proud heart. A proud heart is a heart that lifts itself up. A person who has a proud heart is a person who thinks more highly of himself than he ought. Now, there's nothing wrong with being proud of being a Christian. We ought not to be ashamed of being a Christian, so we use the term in that way, the opposite of shame. We ought not to be ashamed to name the Lord as our Savior in public to other people. We ought to be proud, but don't lift ourselves up as if we're better somehow than somebody else. Our lives may be morally better than somebody, but it doesn't make us better than them, because we're all going to be judged by the same God, and we're all living by the same law, or at least some of us are trying to live by that law, but all of us are responsible to the law. And the other sin of the tongue is tattling. Well, how does tattling differ from these other sins we talk about? Well, this is defined as gossip or idle talk, and usually involves a greatly exaggerated truth. In other words, there is usually a grain of truth in tattling. But it is blown way out of proportion. It is built up and magnified as if it were something that it is not. Paul and John were both inspired to speak out against tattling or prating, which is another name for this same particular sin. In 1 Timothy 5, verse 13, Paul writes, "And besides, they learn to be idle, talking about younger widows, to be widowed at a young age. If you take them into the church to be fully supported, here's what will happen. They will learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things which they ought not." So tattling is gossip or idle talk, and usually involves a greatly exaggerated truth, and almost always is something, whether true or not, you have no business saying, or you're saying it to somebody who has no business knowing it. Not everything you do is everybody's business. Now, if you sin, you need to be brought back to repentance. If your sin is against somebody in particular, that person needs to know it so they can win you back to Christ. And eventually, if they can't, it needs to be made known to the church. But we're not talking here about sin. We're talking about simply something that somebody is saying that they don't have any business, saying. And John says this in 3 John verse 10, "Therefore, if I come, I will call to mind his deeds," talking about Diotrephes, "prating against us with malicious words, and not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren, and forbids those who wish to, putting them out of the church." Here's the situation in the place to which John is addressing these remarks. There's a man called Diotrephes. He had puffed himself up as being of greater importance to everybody. He was going to rule according to the dictates of his own mind and his own opinions. And when John sent a letter to them, he refused to have it read. He wasn't going to let that be read. If you read that, I'm just, you know, we're going to withdraw from it. He would have that kind of influence in that church, and John said, I'm going to deal with him. And so I will call to mind, if I come, I will call to mind his deeds, which he does, praying against us with malicious words. And not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren, forbids those who wish to, putting them out of the church. The apostles were not sinless individuals. Even Peter himself sinned in Antioch when he separated himself from the Gentiles, wouldn't eat with them. And Paul was sent into the faith because he needed to be withstood to the faith. He had committed a public sin and needed to be publicly reproved for that. But Diotrephes, he was praying against the apostles, building things up out of proportion, as if everything they did was sinful and not everything they did was sinful. Even John himself wrote in 1 John, if we say that we have no sin, we deceive ourselves, the truth is not in us. John admitted that he was not one who could live or did live without sin. But John was one who would confess his sins. And not right to talk about someone who has confessed their sins as if they had not confessed their sins. That's the kind of man Diotrephes was. Solomon says, a prating fool shall fall. In Proverbs 10, verse 8, the wise in heart will receive commands, but a prating fool will fall. And so a prating fool is not wise in heart. Now keep in mind that the heart is not talking about the blood pump. It's talking about the emotional, intellectual, ethical, and volitional center of a man. It's talking about the inner man. He's wise. He's truly wise. He has the wisdom of God guiding him. He's wise enough. He will receive commands. He will be receptive to especially the Lord's commands. But a prating fool will fall. Why? A prating fool builds himself up, puffs himself up. He's better than anybody else, and nobody can tell him what to do. Well, God can, will, does, and has told us all what to do, and we need to avail ourselves of that and do that which he tells us to do instead of gossiping about other people. Gossip can destroy friendships, break up families, and split churches. And we sang that song, and I love that song. Anger words, the lips never come the tongue unbridled slip. Those are wise words. We need to take to heart if we haven't already. It destroys friendships, breaks up families, and has split churches. And because what is a church? A church is a collectivity of people, all who have a common relationship in Christ, and then they also have relationships one with another. And if you start praying against them, greatly exaggerating truths, you can destroy their reputation and their friendships, their fellowship with other Christians. So tattling also is a sin of the tongue. Also another sin of the tongue is backbiting. Well, what is backbiting? This is the act of speaking evil of one who is absent while being unwilling to accuse him to his face. If a person is guilty of sin, he needs to know that if he doesn't. If they sin against you, he needs to know that. But a lot of times, instead of dealing with the sinner, we can't wait to tell somebody else about his sin. And that's sad. I heard of one case years ago where an individual, he had done something that was wrong. He repented of it. He confessed it to God, asked God to forgive him. And then there was another person involved, and he went to that person and said, you know, we were wrong in this, and I've repented, and I've confessed it to God, and asked God to forgive me, and I would encourage you to do the same. Well, he went and told his wife about it. Well, what do I do? You know, and then she said, well, I don't know, let me talk to Mama. And she went and talked to her Mama, and then before you know it, the whole church knew about this private sin that had already been taken care of. And then the church withdrew from it because it did that. Even though they demanded he come forward and confess. Well, he had already confessed it. It was a private matter. And yet because of backbiting and gossip, the thing spread and it became publicly known, and he was expected to repent again of what he'd already repented of, and I guess it was all right for them to backbite. they seemed to feel like it was. Paul warned both the Romans and the Corinthians of the evil of backbiting. For example, in he says, backbiters, this is Romans again, haters of God, violent, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful, who knowing the righteous judgment of God that those who practice such things who practice such things who are deserving of death and all and do the same, but also approve those who practice them. Again, Romans chapter 1, verses 29 through 32. Backbiting is an evil thing. And so it's right up there. It's not the head of this list because there were other things that we had mentioned earlier. But right in there next to haters of God, violent, proud, all these things are evil things. We seem to sometimes downplay it. Well, you know, that's not such a bad thing. Well, it has bad company, doesn't it? It's listed among some pretty bad things. And Paul said it's worthy of death. And then he says, "For I fear lest when I come," and he's talking here to the Corinthians because they had.